It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
Historical marker for Confederate General in downtown Salisbury sparked petitions over whether it should be removed from county property. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. His name is General John Henry Winder, or Winder if you prefer. He was born in 1800 in Somerset County and the son of a U.S. Army Brigadier General who fought in the War of 1812. After attending West Point, Winder joined the U.S. Army, and when the Civil War broke out in 1861, he joined the Confederate Army, eventually overseeing its prison of war camps. In 1965, the Maryland Centennial Commission put up a plaque for the general, which was eventually moved to the nearby courthouse in downtown Salisbury. But now there's a petition by a group called Showing Up for Racial Justice, led by James Yamakawa, calling for its removal. That sparked a counterpetition to keep the historical marker, led by Jonathan Taylor, who writes the Eastern Shore News blog. And this morning we have James by phone and Jonathan in studio, and welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Don.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
So before actually we begin, let me just outline what the plaque says. So everybody knows. It says General John Henry Winder, CSA, born near Nanticoke. John Henry Winder was successively a graduate and instructor in West Point, a veteran of the Seminole and Mexican Wars. General Winder joined the Confederacy in 1861 and eventually directed all Confederate military prisons east of the Mississippi. And underneath it says Maryland Civil War Centennial Commission. So first of all, I want to turn to you, James, and give me your argument about why this particular plaque should be removed.
Okay, so a couple things. First, Winder was born in Nanticoke, which was then part of Somerset County. Wicomico County was not created until after the war and Winder's death. The marker was erected in the 1960s during the centennial of the Civil War and at the height of the civil rights movement. And the biggest thing, though, is it is a Confederate general's marker on the courthouse grounds, not 100 feet from where Matthew Williams was lynched in 1931, and equally as close to the former site of the Bird Tavern, where slaves were bought and sold in pre-Civil War days. So it's the image of having this marker commemorating a general who fought in the Confederacy for the cause of keeping Black Americans enslaved next to the site where Black American history has been forgotten and ignored. That'd be the main argument.
Jonathan, how do you respond?
Well, I completely disagree with that. I've had this conversation 1,000 times with people. That I don't see that monument as being anything more than just a monument letting people know that a guy from the area was a general in the Civil War. It says Confederate, but there's no Confederate flag on it. It's just a regular flag showing up on it. And to kind of read too much into it, that's on the individual person, not on everybody in general.
So I want to then turn to an interview I actually did with Mayor of Salisbury, Jake Day, who has called for removal of the historical marker. Now, he says he did so as a private citizen and suggests that the county and state will eventually have to decide if they will take action. And so we're going to go to that. And then after we come out of that, we're going to talk to Jonathan and get his reaction.
My position is based on this. Morally, I have a problem with its presence. It represents a guy who I don't think very much of. And look, he's General Winder served his country for a period of time, and then he served the CSA for a period of time. I imagine there are good things that he did in his life, but I'm very aware of the bad things that he did in his life.
The prison stuff.
Yeah, so let's not forget that it's not as if this was, a general who led troops into battle and fought valiantly and passed away, and that's all she wrote. What in fact happened is, this is a man who was born in Nanticoke at the age of 2, was moved by his father to Baltimore, lived in Baltimore, then moved to North Carolina, then went to West Point, became an officer in the Army, then defected and became an officer, fighting for the Confederate States of America. And as an officer there, he rose through the ranks, became a general, was given command of the prison system where he was accused of and not found guilty of because he had a heart attack the year that he was supposed to go to trial, but was accused of torturing and murdering U.S. soldiers. And I imagine most of your listeners know that I wear the uniform of the United States Army. And I give no quarter to traitors. And anybody who killed U.S. soldiers by torturing them, not in the heat of battle, not in defending a position, but tortured people who were under his control and under his command, who he was supposed to take care of. This violates everything that's true and decent about represents any soldier, regardless of what uniform they wear, or any person in the military. What violates anything that I think is decent as a human being, and we've got a sign for the guy in Salisbury. So, you know, he has no connection to Salisbury, no connection to downtown Salisbury, no connection to that piece of property. And yet there are some significant historical Civil War era events that took place here. We have nothing that acknowledges Camp Upton. We have nothing that, in a significant way, we don't do a good job of acknowledging the history that is connected to Salisbury, and even that location, which, by the way, is a location where the second to last lynching in Maryland's history took place, and I think that's relevant to these conversations. So with all that, why in the world is this sign here? If Nanticoke is proud of the guy, Nanticoke can have the sign. If Nanticoke's not proud of the guy, then, and I would understand why, then, you know, put it in a museum or something. You know, I also think it's a bit disingenuous to suggest that this is an erasure of history. It's not accurate. It doesn't talk about the guy's history. It doesn't talk about what he did or what he was accused of. It doesn't talk about the evidence that supports it. It doesn't talk about any of that. It's a relatively benign marker in terms of its content. It's vanilla. I would just say that if we concern ourselves at all with history, then the marker is poorly located.
Why do you think that there's resistance to the idea of, say, removing this kind of plaque?
Okay, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to give you two reasons. One, I believe that most people who are disconcerted with the idea of moving it, most of that is probably about ignorance. Ignorance to the fact that General Winder isn't from Salisbury, doesn't have a connection here. They probably also don't know the history of General Winder and what he did. But I cannot fail to draw a connection between the fact that the very same people who say history is important, we need to keep that sign there, are the very same people who are opposed to anything that acknowledges the second to last lynching in Maryland of Matthew Williams on that property, on a tree that still exists on that property. That, to me, is just an undeniable connection. And it begs the question, why is one okay and why is one not? I don't want to speculate as to why. I would say that there are probably a variety of reasons that are rooted in history and that are rooted in deep emotions and maybe in family lineages. But I have a real problem that those two things seem to align so easily.
So do you think there's this underlying racial quality then to this?
Absolutely there is. Absolutely there is.
And that's Mayor Jake Day, and he, of course, supports the removal of the historical marker. He does so as a private citizen. By the way, I should note that in talking to Jonathan earlier, he has no problems, as he indicated to me, to having some marker for Matthew Williams, who, of course, was lynched here in the 1930s. And I want you to pick up on what the mayor said. And one of the questions that arises from his description of the general himself is, maybe this is the wrong guy. We're not talking about a General Lee. We're not talking about, you know, Stonewall Jackson. We're talking about somebody who was involved with the prisons and who was certainly accused of what wouldn't certainly be today war crimes.
Well, I understand, and Jake is a good guy. I like Jake, but me and him are like completely opposite ends of the spectrum on this. We've had this conversation between us like seems like 1,000 times. My great-great-great-grandfather was a prisoner of war in Libby Prison in the Civil War. And it was a prison that was being supervised by Winder. And, you know, he was a prisoner exchange. I think what we miss is that this was the Civil War, where how the North won the war was cutting off supplies to the southern states. That's how they won the war. So when the supplies are low, the Confederates couldn't even feed their own troops that were out on the front lines fighting, let alone be able to feed the way. And I'm not saying it's correct, but they couldn't have the food and supplies to take care of prisoners. But, I mean, there was also that happened on the northern end as well. It's just kind of like a big, broad spectrum of, you know, painting it in one particular way. And as far as, like, I understand what, you know, some people want to look at it as a race issue, but I just don't, I don't see it as that. I only see it as that if you want to see it as that. And I guess they could look at me and say, well, you're just not seeing it because you don't want to. No, I just don't see it, period. I mean, I just don't. I don't look at it and go, oh, this is celebrating racism. I don't. I just like it's a guy from the area. I mean, even though he left it too, it don't matter. He was born here. And Wicomico County didn't even exist until 1867. So if that was the case, we would say nobody was from Wicomico County. If we're going to be putting that out there that somehow nobody before that counts as a citizen. And the courthouse is the main place for Wicomico County. So, I mean, if you're going to celebrate somebody from the area, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent, that would be the location to put it.
James, what about that?
Well, I have two quotes that are going to connect to this here. The first is by a author, black author, Ta-Nehisi Coates. Racism is not merely a simplistic hatred. It is more often broad sympathy towards some and broad skepticism towards others. Now, the monument to General Winder, and it's a historical marker, it's a very simple plaque, but it still says something about what our community values. It says, we value this. We value this man's history, as disconnected as it may be from the area. Like as Jake Day wonderfully explained, much better than I ever could, that this man was not connected to the area as much as we think he might have been. So basically, having that marker says that we value that history and not the history of other things surrounding the courthouse. As to the cause of the Confederacy, it's, you can't separate racism from the Civil War. You can't separate racism from anything in this country, honestly, in my opinion. For example, the vice president of the Confederacy, Alexander H. Stephens, in a speech he gave not 3 weeks before the start of the Civil War when the South fired on Fort Sumter, he said, our new government is founded upon exactly the opposite idea. Its foundations are laid, its cornerstone rest, upon the great truth that the Negro is not equal to the white man, that slavery, subordination to the superior race, is his natural and normal condition. And this wasn't an uncommon idea in the Confederate states. A handful of states, like Mississippi, Georgia, South Carolina, like, you know, Texas, they had statements within their declarations of secession that says slavery was the main cause, like the main reason why they seceded from the Union. So you can't separate slavery, you can't separate white supremacy and racism from any discussion about the Civil War. So having this marker next to a place where slaves were bought and sold, and next to a place where years later a black man was lynched for the crime of being black, that itself says that our community values the history of this Confederate general more than the black history, which is our history, which is American history, that surrounds that courthouse.
Jonathan, how do you separate out the racial component of the Civil War on the one hand, as opposed to how many people certainly in the South may view it? Because if you look at, for instance, the racial legacy of slavery, once slavery ends, that doesn't mean that the racial component ends, right? Because we have obviously had Jim Crow. And Even after when Jim Crow was legally demolished, they still had to have things like affirmative action in order to deal with that relationship, which lives on even often to this day. Yeah. How do you separate the two? And I mean, because on the one hand, you want to honor the people who fought. On the other hand, there is this cause. I mean, it seems to me it creates a conundrum, as it were.
Well, I think it's also a history lesson in and of itself, because, you know, you take that the Civil War, you know, there was the fighting and did involve slavery. But it also is, it's such a bigger scale of also not wanting, like in our last election, people didn't want New York and L.A. deciding, you know, an election by population centers. And the South looked at it as the North telling them what they should be doing, which was a big cause. And not every soldier was fighting for slaves. A lot of them were states' rights people, which is, you know, a patriotic thing now to look at. But back then it was, it was different. And I understand that people would look at it as, you know, the slavery thing, and that's absolutely horrible. And I don't think you'll find anybody that would sit here today and say, oh, slavery was good. Nobody's going to say that. I think what happened was you had groups like the Klan that took over that symbolism of the Confederacy to make their own hatred. And then people want to associate the Klan and the Confederate flag as just complete racism instead of just sticking to the Civil War, which was the difference between states back in the 1850s and 60s. That's my view of it.
Okay. Now, although I would just make this observation that when people talk about states' rights, that's a means to an end. That is, you use rights. So, I often said that if, for instance, the to preserve slavery, you could preserve it with a central government, strong central government. You might do that. But let me ask you this. So how does one deal with this idea that, you know, one could say all these artifacts are from about 150 years or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is that these artifacts have also been used for instance, in the opposition to Jim Crow, in favor of Jim Crow. So, for example, we saw a lot of Confederate flags go up above the state capitals during the opposition to desegregation. So it's even to this day, these symbols are connected to that particular issue of race. I'm reminded of somebody who was a state legislator in South Carolina after the shootings there, the 9 African Americans. One of the state legislators was an African American who was killed. And the white legislator said that he never realized what that flag meant until this happened to his friend. I mean, so there is something more going on here than just you're trying to separate it out.
Yeah, well, I think part of the problem also is when you see, like, the guy that went into church and shot, right, you know, the black people in the church. What I don't like is people seeing this guy had Confederate flags and this guy had this kind of thing, and that must mean that that's what drove him to be an idiot and go in and kill people. I'm like, well, you know, some people like the Confederate flag just because it symbolizes the South. I understand that the Klan and others used it as a way to be, you know, a racist organization, and they're as much to blame for the problem as anybody else. Nobody has any tolerance for them, as well as, you know, the groups like James runs that I think are the other way, you know, forcing racism every single day on people that don't even think about it, and kind of forced issue on everybody to talk about it. And I just don't see it as much as people want to say that it's out there, because I think people are much more civilized these days, and it's not something that's in the forefront of everybody's mind.
James, what about this idea about trying to address people who look at the Confederate flag or can look at Confederate symbols and they don't see in themselves their identity to either slavery or to racism, that they simply see this as a symbol of heritage? Well, of course, obviously, many African-Americans are going to see it in a much different light. How do you bridge that gap?
The way I see this is very much trying to put yourself into the experience of another person. It's a Christian belief of mine that we have to do unto others as we would have done unto ourselves. The idea that it doesn't mean that the Confederate flag and other symbols of the Confederacy, by the way, the KKK was started by Confederate veterans originally. The fact that the Confederate symbols don't mean the same thing to a large segment of white Americans does not mean that the symbols don't mean something completely different to another section. We have to be willing to hear our black brothers and sisters, our fellow citizens, when they say that this symbol means something very, very different to them. It reminds them of slavery. It reminds them of Jim Crow, segregation, of separate but equal, of the violence that has been done to black America. And it's not on them to prove to us that that is true. It is on us. It's on white Americans like Mr. Taylor and myself to hear that and to take them at their word. Whether it means something to the individual who has their Confederate flag in their bedroom because they like the idea of Southern pride. That means something, but it doesn't negate the fact that it means something vastly different to a whole bunch of other people.
Jonathan, what do you make of the fact that we've seen this shift now that seems to occur in terms of federal monuments, particularly obviously after the shooting in South Carolina? That prior to that shooting, the statues were up. There was very little discussion. I can remember at least one presidential primary in which in 1990s, in which the great debate was about whether or not the flag should indeed be flown over the state capitol in South Carolina. And the presidential candidate said that should be left to the states. It was an issue that they didn't want to touch. Now it seems as if there is this movement, even amongst conservatives, people like Nikki Haley and so on, some of the many of the Republicans, they're shifting away from that. And there's obviously a lot of turmoil now going on in terms of removing statues, removing flags. I mean, it's on and on it goes. What do you make of that shift?
I'm actually sorry to see it. Because to me, those symbols are just symbolizing our American history. People don't like it. I understand that, but it happened. And I don't see a symbol of Robert E. Lee that they're talking about in, Virginia as some big thing that should be a big issue where people ride by it every day and going, oh, they're saying racism's good because there's a Robert E. Lee statue. It doesn't equate to that, to normal people that don't see race every single day like that. And like I said, James with his SURJ group that's affiliated with Black Lives Matter, they're just as bad as any other group out there to me as a hate group that they just want to stir up racial animosity.
You don't think that they're speaking to racial injustice, whether it's Black Lives Matter? Why not?
Because I think that their whole purpose is to just stir things up with bringing up race in everything, even if it's not there. It's always bringing up race to somebody that, coming in there for the monuments or something else, like having a rally for the guy that was lynched. But I said, where were they last year, 3 years ago, 4 years ago? It's just because right now it's a hot button topic. Everybody wants to come out of the woodwork to get their 5 or 10 minutes on the air or TV so that they can talk about it and look like they're like a race warrior or something. And honestly, that causes more racism than it would if you just left it alone and didn't talk about it, because people are going to respond to it.
James, why don't you respond?
I probably should have saved the Ta-Nehisi Coates quotes to now. I'm going to read it again simply because it says better than I ever could. Racism is not merely a simplistic hatred. It is more often broad sympathy towards some and broad skepticism towards others. And what Mr. Taylor is showing is that his sympathy lies towards people that he feels comfortable with, and that is, white America, which is, he has a right to believe what he believes. But it's that skepticism toward anything that challenges that worldview. It's not, and he tries to connect our group to the Black Lives Matter movement, which as some kind of pejorative. I think we would be honored to be considered part of the Black Lives Matter movement, because Black Lives Matter, all that they're trying to say is that Black lives have historically not mattered in our country. And that sympathy towards white America, but that skepticism toward the experiences of Black America is the problem. And saying that racism wouldn't exist if we just ignored racism is part of that skepticism towards the experiences of people who are not white.
Jonathan, I want you to respond, but one of the things that strikes me is that folks, I'm white, and all the people in this discussion are white.
No, you're not, Don. No.
Yeah. Anyway, one of the things that strikes me, though, is that for the white community, racial incidents on a daily basis are not necessarily visible to us. We don't see them, whether it's somebody's followed around in a store, for example, so that there may be a lack of awareness within the white community about this issue. And when it's brought to the fore, we are quite surprised, or we say, no, this is something that maybe is perhaps stirring something up because we're not aware of it. What about the fact that we on this side of the line, as it were, that we're not really necessarily aware, and maybe we should be.
I think it's a generational thing, because like when I was, I mean, I'm not that old, but I can understand if you were like 70, 80 years old and you grew up through, you know, the civil rights movement, and it was a, you know, it was a problem back then. But like in today's age, I mean, everybody's pretty much on the same level with each other. And so, and I think a lot of times when, you know, like people that want to talk like lately, the term the white privilege, like somehow that because I'm born white means that I walk around like I'm more arrogant or something. It, that kind of stuff just makes people feel like you're calling me a racist because I was born white. Like, you know, I don't feel that way. And what happens is you keep pushing people by saying you're racist because you're white. Well, you're going to make people feel hatred towards whoever's saying it, whether that's the SURJ people, black people, or whoever. And I think you just kind of make it happen by creating that kind of environment with people.
James, I'm just going to respond to that. And how do you deal with what someone might say? Well, I resent the idea that someone is saying or implying, for instance, that I'm racist in the white community. How do you deal with that?
I guess the first thing I would say is that it's not about you. It's part of that, like, you know, white privilege that Mr. Taylor was talking about, is not having to deal with the fact of our whiteness, without having to deal with the fact that, yes, just because I'm white does not mean I'm a bad person. That's obvious. No one's saying that. No, people are saying is that white people have historically had advantages in this country, designed advantages in this country, because of their association with whiteness. So saying that, that, like, you know, like you feel bad because people are calling you racist, that's besides the point. It's not about you. It's about the people who are being harmed by that. And it's a privilege to say that, like, you know, I don't like what you're saying, so I'm going to dismiss it.
Jonathan, just following up, do you have a sense that you indicated almost a moment ago that we're all on the equal footing? I can imagine I've talked to a number of African Americans who say that's clearly not the case. We've seen some studies. You know, if you send a resume in and your name looks African American, you're less likely to be called back. So there's still that there, and I think that's what's indicated by white privilege, I guess, is a way.
Well, I think there's a lot of people that feel nowadays like being black is the privilege that gets them up to the top of the list, because there is a lot of people to feel like now that it's gone overboard, where it's like, oh, well, if there's five white applicants and one black applicant, that even if the white people aren't qualified, or, you know, like are qualified, that they're going to go with the black person because they feel like that's the best way to go and, you know, make people feel comfortable because, hey, we hired the black guy and not the white. And people see that, and it makes people feel like, well, I understand that it was unfair back in, you know, the 1960s, but this is 2017. And, you know, a lot of younger people, you know, are like, what's up with that? I mean, I didn't do anything. I didn't own any slaves or anything, but they see it as an unequal kind of playing field now.
Right. Even though when we do surveys and studies, we find that there's still an advantage if you're a white applicant, for example, right?
Yeah, I mean
there, is it more a feeling, you think, than...
I think that there's a lot of people out there that do feel that more is given towards the black community just because they feel like it's like a we owe it to them kind of thing. And I'm not saying we don't owe, you know, for the, what happened in the past, but you can't expect the modern times to pay for what happened 100 years ago or 40 years ago, 50 years ago. It had nothing to do with me. It was terrible, but at the same time, I don't want to spend the rest of my life answering questions about being racist because of something happened in 1950 South Carolina or something. You know, that's my view.
James, final thoughts?
I think, again, just bringing it back to the subject of the marker. The marker is honoring a Confederate general who fought for the cause of keeping black people enslaved next to a courthouse where slaves were bought and sold, next to a courthouse where a black man was lynched by hundreds of white Salisbury residents for the crime of being black. White feelings do not matter more than black lives, than any lives. But in this case, we're talking about black lives.
We've been speaking with James Yamakawa. He's with Showing Up for Racial Justice, and also Jonathan Taylor, who writes the Eastern Shore News blog. Appreciate both of you coming in and having a good discussion about this. And no doubt we'll see how the issue unfolds, particularly in terms of the plaque. This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.